Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Mark Howard is with us today. By the way, some breaking news, Mark. According to Bruce Feldman, Jeremy Pruitt is working on a deal to join Robert Saleh and the Jets coaching staff up in New York. So Jeremy Pruitt in the Big Apple in the NFL. Has Jeremy Pruitt ever coached in the NFL?
I don't believe so. But so, I think that's a perfect place for him, actually. Toiling in anonymity on that staff. You know, he's not going to be the first guy the media goes to, and gets a chance to. A lot of guys, after they go through what Pruitt went through, just want to coach ball. You know, they don't want to deal with the media. They don't want all that responsibility. And that's exactly what Pruitt's going to have a chance to do.
Meanwhile, Dan Radakovich, the athletic director at Clemson, tells Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, in reference to Tony Elliott, who obviously decided to not take the Tennessee job, quote, "It's a testament to two people, Tony and Dabo. It's rare, but Tony is a unique individual in all the ways the word unique is positive. Down the road, Tony will be a head coach, and he'll be incredibly successful." So Tony Elliott at Clemson turning down opportunities at Tennessee and South Carolina this offseason. Sounds to me like he's holding out for a big one. Like he's holding out for, okay, when Alabama comes open. Okay, when Notre Dame comes open. Okay, like that's what it sounds like. Kind of like Luke Fickle. It sounds like they're holding out for the big job.
It's weird, though, at Clemson, in that everybody seems to ask Tony Elliott, and nobody seems to ask the defensive coordinator, Brett Venables. You know, Venables has a great defense every year, and you hear whispers that Venables has a few skeletons in his closet and all that. But isn't it kind of strange that Tony Elliott is always the first name when a Power Five school job comes open, but you almost never hear about Venables?
People love offense. I think that's part of it. I also think that Venables is kind of crazy, or at least he comes off as crazy. And, you know, he's already making $2.8 million or whatever it is as defensive coordinator at Clemson. So you're going to have to pay him way more than that. And he kind of comes off as crazy. So I'm not sure. But maybe there's probably something to that.
He got Kevin Dodd to play, which is something the Titans staff could never do.
There's certainly something to that. So you and Joe, listening to Joe, I was a little surprised at Joe talking about how uninspired he was by the Josh Heupel hire. And he went over all these other coaches that he would have been more inspired by. You know, whether it was Will Healy or whether it would have been Lane Kiffin or Jamie Chatwell or all these other guys. And I'm not saying that he's not right, but I want to compare Vanderbilt to Tennessee in terms of the excitement around the hire. I think Vandy people were very excited about Clark Lea. I think that he was their number one choice. I think that they jumped out to grab him. He wanted to be here, and he's building a staff. I have no idea if Clark Lea is going to be a good coach or not, but clearly there's excitement about Clark Lea at a football school that really does not have much excitement, really, ever. Tennessee, it's the opposite. There's not a lot of excitement for Josh Heupel because, we're terrible. We got NCAA and, you know, this guy. But I'll ask you this. Are we sure Clark Lea is a better coach than Josh Heupel?
Well, and that's the thing. I've been around long enough to remember when Vanderbilt brought Watson Brown back and everybody thought that, you know, he was going to be the Messiah and, you know, lead this program to the promised land. And it just didn't work out. And I love Watson. I mean, we've stayed friends through the years and, you know, he went on to have a really good run at UAB and he was the offensive coordinator a few places, but the natural choice, as you stated before, and we talked about Scott Frost, we talked about Jim Harbaugh. Hell, Rick Neuheisel went back to UCLA, did okay, but, you know, didn't crush it. you know, he was a starting quarterback there. It doesn't always work out. And I think it's way overrated, because once you get past that first press conference, I think it becomes almost irrelevant. Now for Vanderbilt, Clark Lee, different situation. Clark Lee was the natural choice, and he wanted to come here. And, you know, being the defensive coordinator, the successful coordinator at Notre Dame, had a lot of cachet, so it wasn't a stretch. But you're right. We don't know. In 5 years, we might sit here and go, boy, that was one of the dummies who panned the Heupel hire and loved the Clark Lee hire, and now look what happened. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was in college, I went to a Division III school, Ithaca College, but at Cornell, a guy named George Seifert was named the coach at Cornell. He won 2 games in 3 years and then got fired. And Dick Schultz, the athletic director at the time, said, and it might be politically incorrect, good Indian, bad chief. Yeah, well, George Seifert went on to the 49ers, won multiple Super Bowls, arguably had a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach. You never know.
I have always felt like there have been times where guys have gotten hired, even in the NFL, and I've been like, that is a great hire, and the guy's terrible. And then there are other times where there's hires, and it's just an unmitigated disaster. And there are times where you think a guy's not going to work out, and he ends up in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that Clark Lee, I have no idea. That's how I say about all these. I don't know. It's hard for me to have a feeling about any of these big-time college football hires, because it's so different, right? Like, the job that Clark Lee has to do at Vanderbilt is not the same job that Josh Heupel has to do at Tennessee. Case in point, Butch Jones's third or fourth year would have been good enough that he could have absorbed that terrible year if he was coaching at Vanderbilt, where the expectations aren't the same. Josh Heupel is going to have NCAA sanctions that are kind of levied on his program when he gets in there, and Clark Lee has to go recruit a different kid than Josh Heupel's recruiting. I mean, they're just such different jobs, and yet ultimately I think we're going to look at this and say, hey, if Clark Lee wins 6 games a year at Vanderbilt, that's a great hire. And with Heupel, I don't even know what Heupel would have to do for us to consider it a great hire. But that's kind of part of that to me is part of the hard part about the Tennessee job, is that it's at the absolute bottom right now, and Tennessee fans want it all the way at the top. And I think it's going to take years and years and years and years and years of work for it to be that way.
Well, and Clark Lee, if you're Vanderbilt, is a guy they really almost needed to hire, because Clark Lee will get the alums to write checks, you know, to get the donations, to upgrade the stadium, to upgrade the facilities. Heupel, yeah, you want the alums to write checks, but they're going to do that anyway. And unless Heupel is just an abysmal hire, and I agree with Joe, Danny White's going to get 2 or 3 swings at this, if you believe he's there for the long haul. But, different missions for these two different schools. And again, you know, Vanderbilt, everybody's happy right now. And at Tennessee, you know, fans are engaging in more hand-wringing.
I just wonder, like, if Danny White's going to get 2 or 3 swings at this, and maybe he does, I don't know. If he's going to get 2 or 3 swings at this, how much patience is Heupel going to get?
It's a good question. I think he's going to get 3 or 4 years, unless it's just awful, or unless, you know, he gets caught cheating, which, you know, you hear will not happen. So I think he's committed to Heupel. This program needs some stability. This program needs some continuity. And for better or for worse, it's probably going to happen with Heupel.
Man, I just don't. The one thing I would say about the difference between the current Vol fans and what it was 3 years ago is I think Vol fans are doing a much better job of being self-aware of what their job is and the mess their program is in compared to where it was 3 years ago when they vetoed Greg Schiano, because there's no doubt in my mind that Schiano is probably a better coach on the surface than Josh Heupel.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, my argument always was, look at what Schiano did at Rutgers the first time.
They don't want to hear that.
But that ship has sailed, and now we'll see what happens with Heupel. I think that people are a little too harsh about his record last year. I think almost with any program, what happened under those conditions, those COVID-19 restrictions, I just think produces an outlier. So even though we went 6-4, and a lot of people felt like, you know, that program was going the wrong way, I would cut him some slack for 2020 like I would most coaches.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Mark Howard's with me. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Coming up next, there is one thing. We talk about a lot of the pressure on Josh Heupel, a lot of the – are Tennessee fans at a point with their program where they are willing to admit something that they would not have admitted 5 years ago, maybe would not have even admitted a year ago? We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I told our student athletes I wouldn't share publicly much of what they shared with me about what was happening in our program. For a lot of reasons, we had a great confidential conversation, but I think they'll be okay with me sharing with you that some characteristics they're looking for in a head coach. They talked about a little bit of confidence, a little bit of juice, and a little bit of swagger. And that's something that we have in spades, and they'll continue to have at UCF and their football program. And that's something that you'll see in Josh Heupel, the staff he'll build here, and how we carry ourselves as a football program. Kids are excited. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I think you guys are going to like the brand of football you see.
Kids are excited. That was Danny White, the athletic director, Mark Howard. Remember last week when Danny White at his press conference said, before I even think about who to hire for coach, I'm going to need to talk to the players, and I'm going to need to discuss with the student athletes what they want in a coach. And it just happened to be the last coach he hired at Central Florida.
It's just crazy.
Amazing.
This is a hire. I don't know a lot of University of Tennessee people that are happy today. But again, you need a little perspective. This doesn't look like a great hire. I'm not going to try to portray it for something that it's not. But there are some, you know, there are some other elements to this. I want to see the staff that he's hired. He needs a strong defensive coordinator. And frankly, he's got one on staff with Kevin Steele.
Sure.
He could do a lot worse than Kevin Steele. So I don't know if he has the say to do that. I don't know if that was prearranged. Who's going to be his offensive coordinator? Is he going to be the play caller, or will his coordinator be the play caller? So there are a lot of things we want to know before we start dissecting this thing.
Sure. And I don't disagree with any of that, but it is funny that he said all these things on Friday when his press conference, I got to talk to the players before I find what I want in a coach. And then he turns around and he hires the guy that he had hired last time. I mean, that would be the equivalent. And it might work out. You know, that would be the equivalent of me saying, hey, we are going to do an exhaustive, a national search to replace Floyd Reese, and there will be no stone unturned. Ladies and gentlemen, the new co-host of Stillman & Company, Barry Stillman. My dad is going to be the new co-host. Like,
there you go.
Where'd you find that guy? Like, that's what this is. Now, that being said, it might work out. I am not saying it's not going to work out because I don't know. But 2 years ago, some Tennessee fans will not argue this. Mark, I don't know where you sit on this. 2 years ago, the majority of Tennessee fans would not clap back at this. Or they would have. Today, I don't think they will. 5 years or 3 years ago, they held a protest because of it. I believe Tennessee fans now look at their program with a little bit more self-awareness than they have had in the past. And that is the self-awareness of not everybody in America looks at the Power T and thinks, man, aren't the Vols the big time? They look at it like any other SEC school. They look at all the warts. Honestly, they look at it as a nice piece of real estate that has got its issues. So if you're going to buy it, like, just know there's a lot of liability here, but there's the potential that it could be pretty good. And I think Vol fans, when Greg Schiano was going to get the job, and even last year, they thought that they were destined for greatness and that they were a great program and that they were truly supposed to be treated like one of the best programs in America. And if you didn't treat them like that, then you're crazy. And I think right now, even Vol fans who are diehard fans look at themselves and say, you know what? We're not on par with the big schools in college football right now.
Well, and pardon me, I've got doggy issues here, but I would sit here and tell you that I think the cruelest tease to Tennessee fans was that they thought they had the right guy for a few minutes with Butch Jones. They even thought so with Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, after, you know, after finishing strong, you know, winning a bowl game and all that, I think they felt like this program was on an upward trajectory, and it turned out not to be the case. They totally fell apart last year. You know, we can sit here and say, okay, the COVID-19 situation contributed to the terrible season, but the number 3-7 was 3-7.
I mean, I even think Mark's dog isn't happy about the hire. I mean, he's listed, and I would say again, like, I've seen some people, some Tennessee fans that are really, really mad about this, that are like, you know, I think they're mad at the administration, and they're mad about, you know, same old, every time we try to get excited about our program, this is what happens. And I think just other Vol fans are like, hey man, hopefully this one works. I don't know if it will, but hopefully it does. And I actually kind of agree with that tone more so than the tone of the Vols should be great. Everybody should treat the Vols like they're great. And this is coming from somebody who grew up disliking Tennessee, but at least honored that Tennessee was great. You know, like I could at least tip my cap and say, hey, every year it's the Vols, it's Spurrier in Florida, it's all of those teams in the SEC West. They are legit. They are the top. They are. And I think I felt like when Charlie Strong didn't take the job and Larry Fedora didn't take the job in 2012, I felt like something was wrong, because the Louisville coach and the North Carolina coach, I mean, let's flip this around. Would the Tennessee basketball coach not take the North Carolina basketball job? He'd take it in a heartbeat. Like, that was when I knew. I was like, okay, something's wrong. And then Butch Jones, he kind of vowed to the fans that he was going to build it up back to what it was. And then he got a lot closer than I think people want to give him credit for. And I wonder, had they beaten Vanderbilt in 2016, which they should have, and gotten to the Sugar Bowl, would Butch have been cared for differently? But that's neither here nor there. And then the whole Schiano, Fulmer, Pruitt, this, I mean, it is just like just a punch to the gut over and over and over again. But I think Vol fans, I was starting to notice it in 2012. I think Vol fans are starting to notice it now, or are starting to accept it now, Mark.
Well, the problem was, you know, losing to South Carolina, losing to Vanderbilt, you know, blowing a golden chance to win the SEC East, and then, you know, blowing an opportunity to go to the Sugar Bowl. And I'll tell you, and, you know, I hate to say this, but it's the absolute truth. Everybody wanted Philip Fulmer as athletics director, and his football hire, if these sanctions are real, has set the program back maybe 5 years. And yeah, everybody wanted Fulmer back. He was the hero. And Jeremy Pruitt looks like, you know, with what he did. And, you know, they talk about all these level one sanctions that are going to, that the school is going to get hit with, will result in the loss of scholarships, maybe a bowl appearance and all that, and probably hampered their coaching search this time around. So if you're upset about Josh Heupel, look at Phillip, who exited Knoxville once again with his bank account full.
Oh, he just, there's nobody that has taken more from the University of Tennessee. Now, he's given, but nobody who's taken more than Phillip Fulmer. Texter to the text line says, Jared, you are enjoying watching this Vols mess. I can hear it in your voice. I think that's the recovery from COVID that you can hear in my voice more so than the celebrating the Vols. Let me say this. Going back to the trilogy of coaching searches for the Tennessee Volunteers, the 2012 Butch Jones hire. See, most times when a coaching hire gets done, you remember who gets hired. You remember who got fired and who got hired. But most of the times you don't remember all the in-betweens because most teams don't make all the in-betweens so very public. But unfortunately, that's what's happened with Tennessee. First of all, the one over, you know, over the first two was John Gruden. That every time that this got started, it was John Gruden. And it's like, I don't think John Gruden's leaving $6.5 million.
There was a better chance of me being the coach of the Vols than John Gruden. It just was never going to happen. And you would listen to Vol calls. You would listen to Big Orange Sunday. You would listen, and I don't want to sit here and throw rocks at people at my former station because they weren't stirring it up. But you would have fans call in absolutely sure that Gruden was on the way. And you're thinking just how ridiculous that was. But, yeah, that was part of it.
And it was great because when the 2012 search happened, I mean, I think we can all agree, Dooley had to go. Like, if you, at that point, have those results, you got to go. And so Derek Dooley gets fired. Nobody around the country thought it was a bad thing that Derek Dooley got fired. Nobody thought Derek Dooley got a raw deal. But then it was like, who are they going to hire? And they'd reach out, and every coach that they talked to, Larry Fedora turned them down. Charlie Strong turned them down. And, I mean, I had just graduated from Louisville at the time. And when I heard Tennessee was interested in Charlie Strong, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's gone. See ya. Goodbye, Charlie. And then Charlie stayed, and I was like, okay, if Charlie Strong is not taking that job, then something's wrong with UT. That was when I was enjoying it. Mark, that was when, to the texter's point, I was enjoying it. The Butch Jones thing, I didn't enjoy the Butch getting fired. He did have to go. I enjoyed that I was right about him because I thought Butch was full of it the whole time. And boy, did I get pummeled by people for not drinking the Kool-Aid. So I felt at least a little vindicated. But then the whole Gruden thing and then the Mullen thing and then the everybody wanting T. Martin thing and then the freak out about Schiano thing and then the firing John Curry thing and then somewhere along the lines, Mike Gundy and Jeff Brohm and Mike Leach and all these other guys are all involved in on it. And now this whole thing, I mean, it really is like to the texter's point, I'm really not that excited about this for UT football because I think it's bad. One, I think it's bad for business. Like it's bad for my business. Two, I think it's bad. The fans have been through enough. Even though they've caused some of this, I feel like they've been through enough. And three, I really think it's bad for the SEC. You know, we need Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, and LSU. We need those teams to be good. We don't need Mississippi State to be good. It's okay when they are that one year that they were number one with Dak Prescott, but we don't need them to be good. We need Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, Alabama, Auburn. Like, that's who we need to be good. And I just, as a, you know, a Vandy fan growing up, I think I've seen enough of UT being bad that it is now time for them to be good.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think that rivalries have become a lot more organic in college football the last few years. And us old fogies, you know, will look back romantically at Oklahoma and Nebraska and Kansas and Missouri and, you know, Texas A&M and Texas, which will happen again. And I just think that that rivalries, new rivalries are born almost every year. Yes, we love the tradition. We love the Iron Bowl. We love Ohio State, Michigan, and some of those games. But for the most part, everything happens in cycles. You know, Tennessee will have a down cycle. Georgia, Florida, you know, maybe even South Carolina again one day will have an up cycle. And that's just what happens. And rivalries are born from that. But yeah, it would be nice to see Tennessee good again. They've got a pretty big stadium. Neyland Stadium would look nice, full, especially for a Florida game or an Alabama game. But the league has so many rivalries. You know, that's what makes the SEC the SEC. You know, four great rivalry games. We call that a Saturday in the SEC. So, yeah, I don't think Tennessee's dragging down the conference that much.
615-737-1025. We'll get back to your reaction. But I also have a analogy. Now, I have an analogy that I think is a good one. I think Mark's going to disagree with this. Now, I haven't worked with Mark long enough to know exactly, really to have a true feel for it. Like, I know Floyd would shoot this down. I can say that right now. But
it's the COVID-19 talking.
There is some
can use that as a fallback.
Between the vitamin D and the Tylenol and the aspirin and the, yes, it's everything. But I want to get to that next. And I think it puts into perspective how I think Tennessee fans should feel about Josh Heupel specifically. And so we'll do that next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. How do you feel about Josh Heupel specifically? Take away everything else that's wrong about UT football, but how do you feel about the actual guy coming to coach it? 615-737-1025. FanDuel Sportsbook app. That's my favorite sportsbook app. Celebrate the 55th edition of the big game with an exclusive 55-1 odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook. And if you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook before, new users can bet on either team and get 55-1 odds when Kansas City plays Tampa Bay. That's right. You can bet $5 and win $275 if you pick the big winner of the big game on February 7th. I'm leaning towards the kid over the GOAT. Although you know me, I love the GOAT, and I was stupid for betting against him last week. I've been betting on football all season long with the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's easy to use, easy to register, easy to deposit, easy to find your bet, and when you win, FanDuel will pay your winnings in as little as 24 hours. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use the promo code JGM to get started so they know that we sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook promo code JGM. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. You must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus $275. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
We had an exhaustive nationwide search. I know that sounds crazy because I'm hiring the guy that I've worked with for the last 3 years. But if anything, I was trying not to hire the head coach from UCF. And I say that with respect to Tennessee, but I love UCF and I hate that the transition this is causing for those student athletes down there. That's the hard part of college athletics. And after going through extensive candidates, we left no stone unturned. I'd like to thank the candidates. You'd be amazed if I could ever tell you, and I won't, how many candidates we spoke with, and there were no leaks until last night. Only two leaks I've been a part of in my career as an AD, and both of them happened in the last week. So we need to work on that here. We got to figure that one out. That'll be one of my top priorities as we go through here. But I really wanted the student athletes to find out first from me, and certainly I would want that for any group of student athletes. But obviously, the student athletes at UCF, that it's a shame that it leaked. But we'll continue to work on that, tighten some things up.
Welcome to the big leagues, Danny White. Leagues happen. They're going to continue to happen. So, Mark Howard, I have an analogy of how I think Vol fans should approach the Josh Heupel era. You ready for it? And I'm very proud of this, by the way, because I thought of it last night. I think that they should feel the way they feel about this football program right now, the same way they felt about the basketball program when Rick Barnes got the job and they were an unmitigated disaster after all the Bruce Pearl drama, the Conzo Martin kind of fake Sweet 16 run bolt, Donnie Tindall and the NCAA allegations, and the scorched earth that was left for Rick Barnes when he got the job, and they were awful that first year. Now, they were good enough to get Kevin Stallings out of town, but other than that, they were awful. And then that second year, they weren't good, but they certainly weren't as bad. And then out of nowhere, completely unexpected, Rick Barnes got it turned around because there was no pressure and there was tons of patience. And the fans, I felt like the fans truly enjoyed those Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, Jordan Bone teams, even though deep down inside I felt like Rick Barnes underachieved as far as the tournament was concerned, which is the biggest fatal flaw of Rick Barnes over time. But Rick Barnes underachieved those 2 years in the tournament, but the fans didn't care. They enjoyed those teams, and they love Rick Barnes. And I think nobody does less with more than Rick Barnes. You give him a great team, they'll get him to the Sweet 16. You give him a good team, he'll get beat in the first round. Like he finds a way to kind of minimize the end product of what he's got. And Tennessee fans never seem to get upset about that. They seem to love Rick Barnes. They seem to look at a game like last night's game where a team in Mississippi State who doesn't even belong on the same floor with Tennessee, you know, plays tough with them. And they say, hey, you know what? Great job, Coach Barnes. And you know what? That's how they should feel about the football program, and that's how they should feel about Josh Heupel, and their lives will be better because of it if they feel that way. Your thoughts, Mark?
So you grew up in this area?
I did.
Know, football and basketball are, you know, are apples and bowling balls. They're just not viewed the same way. You know,
I didn't say they were going to do it.
Is really
I said they
religion.
Should do it.
Well, yeah, but that's just not going to happen ever in Tennessee. The irony is not lost on me that, you know, Josh Heupel toiled, I don't want to say in relative anonymity in Orlando with Central Michigan or with Central Florida, but here he was in the middle of a state that had, you know, the U, you know, University of Florida, Florida State. And, you know, I'm sure at times that program, you know, wanted a little more pub than it was getting. And now he comes to Tennessee. He's not going to have to worry about that. He is suddenly the bigger fish in the bigger pond. But he can't run away from what this program is. And I'm sure he knows what he's getting himself into, but it's going to be tough for him. It's going to be interesting just to see how he proceeds in the next month or so, not only hiring a staff, but how he manages the Vols already in the, transfer portal, and who he's going to get out of the transfer portal. That's going to be big too. That's become a different aspect in terms of team building. So how he puts this team together, who he's going to have at quarterback, that's going to be interesting. A lot of questions unanswered as Heupel, you know, comes in amidst a lukewarm reception.
Texter says, you guys are saying that it's the fans' fault, but you gassed up Pruitt and Butch more than any other UT media outlet. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ian, back me up on this. Butch Jones, Jeremy Pruitt, never Never was I a supporter.
No, I don't think you were ever sold on either. I think Floyd was kind of a big supporter of Pruitt.
Well, we know why.
If I remember, because he's kind of a football guy and all that kind of stuff. But I do think you are out on both Butch and... Yes, both of them.
Well, I mean, Floyd got Saban's blessing on Pruitt. That's what that came down to, in my opinion. But no, never believed in either of them. I mean, I don't really believe in Heupel, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he didn't do anything today that makes me think, oh, my God, I can't believe it. The thing about Heupel's coaching tenure that I guess would worry me the most right now is the getting fired at Oklahoma. But then they replaced him with the East Carolina coordinator, Lincoln Riley, and that guy turned out to be a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't knock that one too hard.
He says he still hasn't spoken to Stoops since he fired him, but that was his college coach.
They won a title with him. I mean, that is, yeah. Oof. Okay, we'll take a Vols breather. 615-737-1025. There's about six different topics since I've been off for 3 days, dealing with COVID. Obviously, there's like six different things I want to hit on. There's a lot of apologizing that I have to do, Mark. A lot of apologizing to the people. I hope you're okay with that.
All right, well.
And as I've said, I am an equal opportunity rear end ripper, which means that if I got to give credit where credit's due. So we'll hit on a bunch of different stuff. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5, the game. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. Mark Howard. It's a re-entry day for me because, obviously, I've been out the last couple of days. So I have a couple of things I'd like to get off my chest, if you're okay with that.
Go get him, kid.
I'm just
company. You're Stillman. Hey,
you are the man. But the first thing is I picked Green Bay in a blowout, and I picked Buffalo over Kansas City. So I was wrong about all of that, and I spent all winter – kissing up to the Buffalo Bills, and I was so heartbroken and by how they played on Sunday. But let me say this. I long believed when he was offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans that Matt LaFleur was a doofus. And I never, never liked him as offensive coordinator of the Titans. And we argued on this show, Mark, every day about Matt LaFleur. And I was so glad to see him go. And I so was ready for him to bomb out in Green Bay and for me to laugh and for him to only go on and dominate 2 years and get to two NFC title games. And finally, my moment of clarity with Matt LaFleur for the rest of the country came through on Sunday. Because Matt LaFleur looked like a man who did not even understand basic mathematics on Sunday, and I did take a little joy out of that.
Well, it was a lack of competitive fortitude, and believe me, my DraftKings account pretty much was in sync with your picks. So believe me, I thought the Packers would win. I thought it was the perfect scenario, for them to set up for victory, and giving up that touchdown late in the first half and not going for that touchdown late in the game, to me, was coaching malpractice. We can sit here and debate all we want, but I think it sort of reflects when you've got Aaron Rodgers at the trigger, first of all, as far as going for it. I mean, you've got a walk-in Hall of Fame quarterback who's going to be the MVP of the league. And if there's any quarterback that you go for it on fourth down, it's Aaron Rodgers, and he didn't do it. And Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator, gets the dunce's cap for allowing that late touchdown. I'm sorry. I mean, that's why the Packers are spectators. And that's why I would have loved to have an honest conversation with Aaron Rodgers after that game, because he could not be happy with his coaching staff on both sides of the ball.
No, you don't take the bat out of his hands with the game on the line. Like, you don't go to the bullpen. I mean, Grady Little got fired for not going to the bullpen, but you don't go to the bullpen on Aaron Rodgers in that moment, and Matt LaFleur did. Number two, Jerry Stackhouse. I'm sorry, Mark. I have no idea how you feel about Jerry Stackhouse, so I don't know why I said I'm sorry.
He's well-dressed.
But I owe a small, not a full apology to Kevin Stallings, but I owe a small apology to Kevin Stallings. And here's why I owe a small apology to Kevin Stallings. Because I had always thought that Stallings was holding Vandy back. I always felt like, you know, he was kind of mean. He yelled at the players too much. He stomped the floor. He seemed kind of rude. And then, honestly, he got out-coached a lot towards the end. And I always felt like Stallings was holding Vandy back. Now, I still think it was time for him to go, but maybe I shouldn't have been so pushy at the time about how much better things were going to be as soon as Kevin Stallings left. Now, I think that Bryce Drew and Jerry Stackhouse are Mike Munchak and Ken Whisenhunt after Jeff Fisher, and it's time to find the Mike Vrabel of Vandy basketball. But Jerry Stackhouse is awful. I'm not going to sit here and say he's got to go, because I don't think they're going to fire him, paying him all this money. But I don't even think he wants to be here. I mean, he's throwing kids under the bus. He's blocking people on Twitter. He's getting all sensitive about everything. Like, Jerry Stackhouse, coach better. Don't throw college kids under the bus. This isn't the pros. When they played Kentucky and it was tied at the end, Calipari called timeout, drew up his play, got his game-winning shot. Jerry Stackhouse's guys, Jerry doesn't call timeout, sits on the bench because he thinks he's an NBA coach, which he's not, thinks he's an NBA coach, doesn't call timeout. His team looks discombobulated. They miss a shot at the end of the game, they lose. Jerry Stackhouse has never known how to coach in college. He does not know how to coach in college, and he certainly does not have – he's not strong enough from a personality standpoint. If you can't deal – with the pressure at Vanderbilt, where there is a significant lack of media exposure and a significant lack of fan pressure, I don't know if you can succeed anywhere. But I think it would be best for Jerry at the end of the year to just go back to the NBA and mutually part ways with Vandy, because it's going to kill his coaching stock if he stays here and keeps doing what he's doing both on and off the court.
I have been, first of all, Kevin Stallings, and I like him a lot. I didn't agree with everything that he did, but I think that especially towards the end, he was largely unappreciated by the Vanderbilt fan base, who always thought they could do better. They get Bryce Drew, and he entices them with a couple of lottery picks for the NBA, first-round draft picks. But one-and-doners at Vanderbilt absolutely cripples the program. And you saw what happened. The best players ended up holding the program hostage. One gets hurt. Another one decides he doesn't want to play. And then they transition to Stackhouse. And he's got a tough job to do. I'm not going to deny that. And I want to see how this team does the rest of the year. But I'll tell you what, Jared. Vanderbilt is encroaching on SEC history, as I think, and I haven't checked this. I don't know if a program's ever gone winless in football and then winless in the conference in basketball. That is a rare double indeed, and one you don't want to achieve.
And they've got – I mean, they're not a good team, but like Scottie Pippen Jr., I mean, he's a baller. And they've got some players now, and I just think Stackhouse, I think he has no idea how to coach in college. And Joe Rex Rhodes, blowing me up, saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Stackhouse is a great coach. Get to know Stackhouse and be buddy-buddy with him, and you'll see he's a good coach. And, I mean, I'm already blocked on Twitter by Jerry Stackhouse, so I don't foresee that being a thing. Apparently, everybody's now getting blocked by Jerry Stackhouse, but he's a joke. Stackhouse is a joke. And I don't understand how a coach – who played in the NBA for as long as Stackhouse did, cannot take the little bit of heat at Vandy. Like, you had buildings booing you and screaming at you, and you played at North Carolina, and you went to, you'd go on the road to Duke. And at Vanderbilt, you're going to get mad because you threw the kid under the bus, and everybody's like, hey, Jerry, that's a bad idea. So, Stackhouse, If this were like a political thing where they've got the decision desk, we've seen enough. We're ready to call it for Jerry Stackhouse over here. And then the final thing, the Baseball Hall of Fame. Mark, the people who cover baseball, I have decided, are almost as inept as the people who run baseball. And maybe that's the problem with baseball. And I love baseball, and I wish baseball were as popular as it was when I was a kid. I wish it was probably as popular as it was when you were growing up, Mark, because it was probably on the downward spiral when I was a kid. But then I look at the holier-than-thous who are voting in the Hall of Fame, and I'm like, okay. Like, look, I don't like certain guys for cheating either. You know, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. You want to do what you want to do with that, that's fine. But we can't put any of these good players in, and we got people voting LaTroy Hawkins into the Hall of Fame at the same time. Scrap it. Get these old baseball, well, in my day, we can't vote for this guy because, or like Curt Schilling, for example. I can't stand Curt Schilling and all of his shenanigans or whatever. But Curt Schilling was dominant on three teams that he pitched to the World Series. That's a big deal to me. He should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't like Ty Cobb either, but guess what? He should be in the Hall of Fame. And so I think that Todd Helton should be in the Hall of Fame. I think that Andrew Jones should be in the Hall of Fame. I think that Schilling should be in the Hall of Fame. And yet we got people voting LaTroy Hawkins and Omar Vizquel. And I'm just like, you know what? Fine, baseball. Just you guys, you people who cover it, just keep covering it. And you people who run it, keep running it. And don't put in a designated hitter in the National League, because apparently that's how baseball wants to be.
Well, you're all over the place here.
True.
First of all, Omar Vizquel should be in the Hall of Fame. But given his recent misdeeds, I don't know. I mean, they've got to decide, you know, and I think they are purposely put in a gray area in terms of, you know, what it takes to be in the Hall. You know, there are certain PED users that I think should be in. I think it's crazy that Andy Pettit doesn't get more play. And I know that Andy Pettit got caught and all that, but to me, he wasn't a real huge offender, if you believe, you know, his testimony.
Yeah,
Roger Clemens, on the other hand, I have a problem with. Roger Clemens had an incredible career after the age of 36. That just doesn't happen. It just doesn't. Barry Bonds' best work came very late in his career, but he was a Hall of Famer anyway. So you got to take him on a case-by-case basis. Yeah, the stuff, a lot of his Twitter activity absolutely revolts me. But you're right. If you judge him between the lines, he should be a Hall of Famer. And there are some inconsistencies there.
Okay, so Clemens, no. Bonds, yes?
I Clemens probably yes, but I just hate the fact that he obviously cheated at the end of his career. He did. I mean, look at his body. Look at his numbers. Barry Bonds' numbers, you know, after 1998, I believe, ridiculous. But to me, he was a Hall of Famer before. Sammy Sosa, I don't think as much. Andrew Jones, yeah, you can make a decent argument, but I think there are better candidates. There are a bunch of guys there that I'm surprised, you know, don't get more play. And you know, Andy Pettit, I'm a little biased because I'm a Yankee fan. But I don't think that there are any pitchers, or there are only a couple, who have 100 more wins than losses that aren't in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, for Pettit only to get 15% of the vote is absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, that's where we are right now. I think eventually, some of these writers are going to come around. But, yeah, it's kind of weird yesterday that nobody got voted in.
So I just want to get all those things off my chest. 615-737-1025 coming up next. One big question that surrounds the Vols and is a big deal here in Nashville. We'll discuss next. Stillman and Company. Mark Howard's here. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.